Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
This is Denny Somach, host of The Rock Podcast. I'm a producer, author, and rock historian, and I want to share with you some of the greatest stories in rock and roll.
Well, Bonzo was the best hard rock drummer ever, hands down. I mean, no one comes within a mile of him.
I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. John Lennon had this wise guy look on his face, just like me and my friends were just a bunch of wise guys, street kids.
The first guitar I ever had was Spanish guitar, and I couldn't really get the hang of it. I was only 13.
I had never written a song before, actually, and so Jim says, okay, everybody go home and write some songs, you know. And so I went home and wrote Light My Fire.
Join me for The Rock Podcast, the only podcast that matters, from Podcast One or wherever you get yours.
All right. Well, in this show, we talked to Dr. Fred Simeon, who have the Simeon Collection just outside of Philly with some incredible cars.
Just amazing.
Collection. And we get the full story of that Phil Spector Daytona Cobra, which is an awesome story and some prices realized.
Yeah.
First, and then, Matt, yeah.
We'll touch a little bit on the Toyota Supra as well. But before we get started, you know, Dodge was ranked number one in initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule a test drive today.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. I chose to get on a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming, friend. Welcome to CarCast, man. Of course, it's Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea over there.
He's getting better.
Yeah, Rhino's getting it.
It's getting there.
Kind of reminds me of when you teach someone to ride the unicycle, you know? It's like a first couple pedals, you know, once they get up on it. Be a little tough, but baby bird's taking its first steps. Fred Simeon is going to join us. Fred Simeon is... this is a guy I followed for a while. He's got an amazing collection. I think we all kind of, I don't like the brass era cars. I don't like the steam powered cars. I don't like a lot of that kind of wagon wheel stuff and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, later on, you know, a Tucker or something is fine, but I like the race cars. And, Simeon, I guess he's out of Philadelphia or Pennsylvania area. He's got great cars. He's got GT40s. He's got the Daytona coupe. He's got Ferraris. He's got probably some Maserati race cars. A lot of race cars. Big emphasis on, you know, international racing. Big emphasis on Le Mans. So his stuff's all right up my alley. And he's the guy who was able to wrestle away that Daytona Cobra from Phil Spector's bodyguard's daughter, who sort of went crazy and lit herself on fire and killed herself and had the car sort of in her garage for all those years.
Yeah.
He was able to strike up a deal with her, and she wasn't talking to people, and it's rumored that Shelby went to her home and she wouldn't let him in, kind of thing. So be very interested in talking to Simeon about that car. Now, is he going to give us the price? I don't know, because now he went and put the thing carefully back to how it was, but I think he was keen to leave a lot of the patina and stuff on it.
Yeah.
So he didn't do a full cosmetic restoration. He had to get rid of, I guess, a lot of the paint, a lot of the house paint that was on it that Phil Spector did and nonsense like that. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't really know the story about how Phil Spector got the car.
Phil Spector bought the car from a guy who had those big slot car tracks that used to be throughout the United States,
okay,
you know, And I don't know if you ever went to one of those.
No.
There used to be a few of them. There was one out here in the San Fernando Valley. There was one down on the promenade, I think, in Santa Monica.
Oh, wow.
These were just like medium-sized stores, probably about the size you'd put some sort of medium-sized retail shop in now. And they just had giant slot. They had the giant slot car set with the, I don't know what gauge or scale, but the cars were 6 inches long and guys would bring them and race them and you could buy cars there and you'd bring your own remote and plug it in and race other guys.
Yeah,
they have some guys like in the corners kind of grabbing them and setting them back up again. And they'd go under a bridge and over a thing. And it was kind of... was kind of cool. I did it a little bit when I was, 13 or 14 or something like that. But that guy bought the car. I don't know. That guy paid, $3,000 for it or something and sold it to Phil Spector for $10,000 and thought he was a genius. And then Phil Spector drove it around. And he wrote stuff on it, like it had the Bonneville record. Not the Bonneville.
He drove
it
around. That's amazing. How do you get
you don't know this story?
How do you get his hair to fit in there?
he got the car, and he probably put like a FM, AM, FM radio in it, and he started painting on the side, like holds the record. That's the car that went out to the Salt Flats and had the 24-hour speed record or whatever it is. And he started writing, like, all the shit on the side of the car with, like, house paint. And then he took it and he just drove it to work and stuff. And, of course, it was louder and shit. And then he got a bunch of speeding tickets. And I think his people sort of convinced him to part ways with it. He was getting into trouble with it. Of course, it was hot and loud and everything else.
Yeah.
So he then either gave it to his bodyguard or he sold it to him for like $1,000. And then the bodyguard just got it, I guess, put it in the garage and gave it to his daughter. Then bodyguard died and things sat in the garage. And the daughter turned out to be just like a crazy, 20 years later. 25 years later, it was like a crazy middle-aged woman, and people started to get the idea that that car was somewhere, and it was in her garage out here in SoCal. And then they just – suitors would, like, show up, and she was like the crazy middle-aged lady. And, they'd make her offers, and she'd tell them that wasn't interested and keep their money and blah, blah, blah. And finally – I guess Fred Simeon and his team made the offer and she accepted it. And then she went out on a trail for a hike and poured gasoline on herself and lit herself on fire.
That's a harsh way to go.
Right.
If you're going to do it.
Yeah.
It's a harsh way to go.
Now that car's $30 million. I don't know. I feel like Fred probably got it for well under five.
Oh, we're going to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely going to ask.
That was probably in, early 01, 02 or somewhere in there. I don't know. That's as much as I know. But I know a lot, but the person knows the most is Fred. So
right, well,
do your Dodge
it.
And we'll talk to Fred Simeon.
Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. Check it out. Go to Dodge.com or schedule your test drive. Go to your local dealer. Either way.
All right. So Fred is on the he's on line one, so we'll speak to Dr. Fred Simeon. Doctor?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I've been following you for some time, so I'm excited to speak to you.
Hello.
And I've been following you as well.
Oh, good. Well, first, I think we're kindred spirits. We both love the race cars. Let's talk about some of the... It's going to be hard to limit it to 8 or 10, but give us some of the jewels in the Simeon Collection crown in as far as race cars Le Mans goes.
Well, real fast, we have the Bugatti that won the 37 Le Mans, GT40 Mark II from 1966, GT40 Mark IV from 1967, Ferrari Testarossa, Ferrari 375 millimeter, Aston Martin DBR1, nice big boot Cunningham, a Maserati 300S, Porsche 917, Porsche 1975 33 GT12, and so on. And the Cobra Daytona Coupe, of course.
Yeah. What is the Cunningham car?
He made two roadsters and a coupe for racing. And he kept one roadster and one coupe, and we were able to get the other roadster. The best thing it did was second place in, I think, the 1954 Le Mans class win.
So I've seen some exposés on you and your collection. I think this was this is a family affair, right?
Well, my dad, he gave me, you know, typical Italian dad, one son. He gave me all the time and attention I needed. He was a $3 a visit, a family doc, but he spent a lot of time with me, and he's my hero.
Did he
four of these cars he collected, but they were the old beaters like Auburn Speedsters and Cords and things.
And when did you start your collection?
Well, when I first got a few bucks, which is I finished medical school, I had a teaching job at Penn, and I got a little salary. So I would say about 1970.
And isn't it fortuitous, or maybe not? You know, I always think about our friend Bruce Meyer, who I'm sure you know well.
Very well.
He's probably always trying to get you to do something, right?
Right, right.
That's my relationship with him.
He's a simulator.
Yeah. Hey, I talked to the CHP. There's a raffle was won. They want to tour your basement.
Yeah.
You're going to be home.
And then you're going to play 18 rounds of golf with this guy. Some fans.
We love Bruce. So
he's great.
He's great. So he started collecting cars. He liked race cars. He liked Le Mans. Race cars, Le Mans race cars, and race cars in general weren't really considered collector cars in a traditional sense until recently. I mean, they always had historic value, but not as of late. As of late, they've really gone insane, especially Le Mans cars. Can you speak to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, like other historical objects, the cream of the top always gets the most attention and therefore the most value. So when a car has all the right stuff, plus it won a major race, plus where the major race was a Le Mans or a Sebring or a Mille Miglia, it just adds to it. You know, it's like the winner of the battle, his gun and his chariot is the most valuable. In my case, it was all 100% history, and it was about the big cars that won in these big races. So I don't date my cars. I fall in love with them and keep them. So I was always searching for those particular type of cars.
Yeah, but the values have just skyrocketed for the race cars. I'm saying just semi recently.
Yes.
So let's talk about the Daytona, because I know quite a bit about that car. I'm very interested in the story. You know all of the story. I know half of the story. It was owned by the daughter of the bodyguard of, what's his name?
Phil
Spector's bodyguard.
Phil Spector.
That's correct, right? It was out in Southern California, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Was it just in her garage?
For 30 years, she paid storage fees for 30 years, from 1971 to 2001. And she was a Sears warehouse girl, so she didn't have a lot of money. But for whatever reason, she kept it there and wouldn't let anybody see it.
And,
But everybody knew about it, or a lot of people knew? Like,
Well, what happened was they knew about it on the coast. They would come, but she wouldn't show them a car, and she wouldn't talk to them. In fact, Carroll Shelby told me once he went to see it, and he said, the bitch would only talk to me through a screen door. she was that reclusive about it. She wouldn't let anybody. So by 1990, which was 20 years of storage, the trace was cold. Everybody said, you can't get that. The lady's crazy. And then they finally lost track of it.
And then you showed up in 01?
Right. Mm-hmm.
and you knew where it was, but you then had to have a sort of liaison go try to make contact with her?
Well, yeah, the liaison really did most of the work. Martin was is a great friend, and he did a wonderful job on this. But he got a detective. He played it right. And when he approached her, he didn't lowball her. For the time, we paid whatever the market was. So the deal was done.
What do you feel like the market was back then?
I think we paid 3.5. Yeah, it was around 3.5. I forget the exact number, but that was close.
Do you have any idea of what the previous offers were? Like, you know, like, did somebody offer her $100,000 or $2 million? And she's, for some reason, she thought it was going to be a lot more.
Yeah. She never revealed that to us. And it had been so long ago, I think the last time anybody looked at it might have been a decade ago. It was obviously time for her to sell. Martin did a beautiful job of massaging the thing, and he knew I was anxious, so he just closed the deal. But then let me tell you what happened. It was in the L.A. Times. In fact, Jay sent me a clipping from the L.A. Times, and the West Coast Cobra guys went batshit. You know, they said, oh, my God, this has got to be a public sale. They gate the sale. They went to the judge. Lawsuits are flying. But the judge said, you know, she had the pink slip. He paid her a fair price. I'm not going to negate the sale. In the meantime, one day the car shows up at my garage. I hadn't paid a penny for it, but Martin said, I got to get this out of Dodge because they're ready to replevin it and take it. So he just, as soon as he got it, he took it and sent it to Philly.
The car, let's backtrack a little and talk about the history of that car.
Yep. Yeah. I'll give you the cliff notes real quick,
please.
Okay? Because I don't want to make it too long. But, you know, Carroll Shelby has a hard one for Ferrari. He knows he can win with a GT. He says, we got to make a GT. He hires this young genius. I mean, this kid is young and he's incredibly bright. And literally on the back of an envelope, he makes a drawing of a car. 6 months later, this car goes out and is 20 miles an hour. Faster than the standard Cobra that it's sitting on. Of course,
Pete Brock. Right. Sorry for stepping on that.
Pete Brock. So after that, they race by 65. Shelby's involved in the GT40 program. He tries to unload these cars, which really nobody wants. You know, nobody wanted them. He finally put a quick and dirty paint job on our car, covered up the roundels, put a nice engine in it, and he sold it to somebody who had it for really just a few months before it went to Spectre. Spectre hated it. If you've already driven one, they're loud, they're noisy, they're cammy, they're uncontrollable, and he gave it to his bodyguard.
That car, I know that's the car that went out to the Salt Flats, right?
Yeah, what happened there was Goodyear was trying to screw Firestone out of the ideal weather at the Salt Flats. So they called Shelby up and they said, send something out so we can test our tires because next week Firestone's working, it's going to be wet. So he sends my car out. And all these things I've been talking about are my car because that was the first one and the only one built in America. And it goes out. Craig Breedlove's there. And they were, you ready for this? 23 speed and distance records, which were there since 1936.
Hmm. Wow. And I know Phil took some house paint and put a lot of that information on the quarter panel or something. And part of what you had to do was restore the car, but you didn't want to strip it of the patina. So what was that process like?
That was house paint. And there's a thing in surgery called a beaver knife, which is very thin. And you can actually get between the paint, the fake paint and the real paint, and scrape off the house paint. Now, of course, then there's a difference in oxidation under it, but one coat of white compound, and it's all the same. So we just gradually scraped it off without scratching anything.
What else, what other kind of modifications had Phil made to the car, had taken place on the car over the years?
he did virtually nothing. He didn't spend a nickel on it. He hated it. The one thing the car had was the exhaust came out originally under the door, and when we got it, it was rerouted to coming out the back. And that's about the only modification I can think he made. Of course, Pete and I had a little battle about this. He thinks that Spector repainted it and all that, but we have the work order from Shelby. They splashed the paint on it before they sold it, and nobody ever touched it since. So the only modification he made, if he did it, was to reroute the exhaust.
And the car today has a, how would you describe it, with a sort of patina? I mean, I've seen it just in photos, mm-hmm. and videos and things like that. It looks, I don't know, it has a patina on it, I would yeah. describe it.
Well, it looks like what we want was a used 1965 race car. It's got some battle scars on it, but it shows its history. Now, I'm not putting down the other cars because, you know, they made five of them with the bodies made in Italy. But they all look like super performance replicas. They're shiny. They're bright. The white is white. They all look like they were painted yesterday. And I don't like that look. If the car's got a race history and we got it with that, why change it?
Do you reckon that car's worth $30 million today?
You know, Adam, I donated these to a charity. This whole museum is a charity, so I don't even think about money. Money was always irrelevant. I had to scrape to buy it after it showed up at my doorstep. So I don't know. I mean, I've been offered numbers that are in that range, but again, you know, I suspect if two people were after it and really started the bid, it could go up high. The money's meaningless. I wouldn't have given them away if the money meant anything. It's the history and the preservation that it's the motivation.
Word on the street is that you were bidding against me for the Newman 935.
Not true, although I think that's not true, although I think that's by far. You're talking about the 1979 one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I have said that's the one car in the Corolla collection that I would want that would fit in the collection of major race winners. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have you seen the whole collection? I mean, there could be more than one.
You don't want a Datsun 510?
You sure you don't want a Roadster, like a Datsun Roadster? Yeah.
No. I mean, how can I put a Datsun Roadster against a Ferrari Testarossa? You know, I mean, they're all lined up. We have 10 cars in a Le Mans background. It looks like they're ready to take off and run. We got Armco and hay bales and old tires in there to make it look a little gritty.
Yeah.
But the 935 that you have is a treasure.
Well, it's not for sale, but go ahead and make an offer.
I'll trade you for the Daytona.
Yeah.
Throw in the scalpel.
And 50 grand not, cash.
Yeah. Not quite.
No?
Not quite. How many square feet do you guys have?
Under roof, it's about 85,000.
Wow. I'd love. How far out of Philly are you?
We're about 10 minutes from the airport.
Wow. I got to get by there.
And
next time.
The dioramas are, there's 10 Le Mans exhibits. There's a beautiful Millimedia exhibit with a lot of pre-war. We have 5 8-cylinder Alphas. Yeah. So a lot of pre-war Alphas. We got a bunch of neat stuff. And it's all in an exhibit trying to make you feel like you're at the race. We don't want to put these cars on pedestals and then they become statues and nobody drives them. All of the cars go out on weekends. They have 3 acres in the back and we call it a track and we kind of tootle around on that.
This is publicly available now. Like you said, you set up basically a nonprofit. This museum is there. People can visit the museum
6 days a week. 6 days a week. Like all other museums in Philly, we're closed Monday, but we're here 6 days a week.
Well, we're going to be in Philly.
Kids are free.
In June.
Go ahead.
In June, I'm coming out to Philly to do some shows, so we'll definitely hit
you
up.
Well, you're very much invited. We could have a lot of time talking cars, for sure.
Yeah. So last question. A lot of, we were just at the, where were we, in Naples? The
Collier Museum?
Collier Collection, yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll lend some of those cars out for some of the vintage events I do. As a matter of fact, I saw the scarab that John Morton rolled at one of the events we were doing at Pebble Beach or Laguna Seca. Do you take these cars out, or not you, but do you lend them out, so to speak, for vintage events and things of that nature?
Well, here's the problem. I just listed some of the cars. There's 70. I just listed maybe 10 for you. How would you like to pay the insurance premium agreed value for those cars?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I've discovered.
I can't afford the insurance, and they never leave. But on the other hand, people can come here 5-6 days a week to see them. But I just can't afford the insurance. It's way more than we could pay. I mean, premiums like that would be nuts.
Well, I got good news for you. There's no insurance on the track.
So yeah, you couldn't insure it anyway. On the racetrack. Getting it there, sure.
Getting it there, yeah. But the track insurance, I don't think it really exists.
It's every man for himself.
I've certainly looked into it.
Yeah.
So you fire the cars up. You'll take them around. I saw it on an episode of Carology or Incarcerated.
Autobiography.
Right.
Incarcerated.
Write that down. Famous criminals.
the cars of famous criminals.
The Whittington Brothers in 1982. That's a good title for a show.
Yeah.
Fred. Dr. Fred.
Please call me Fred, Adam.
Oh, okay.
The doctor's long gone.
Yeah, I love your collection. I'm so impressed with it. Their cars are right in my wheelhouse, and I'm really excited about coming out there in June, was it, Chris? And meeting you in person and taking a look at these terrific cars.
Well, you can have a pick one or two or three, and you can drive them around. We have 3 acres in the back where you can, you know, go through the gears and have a good time.
I would love to do that. Set up the cones. I'll bring the beer. We'll ring out that Testarossa.
Yeah, see where it goes. We're going to let you go in a second, but just one quick question. I had a note here about what your favorite car is in the collection, and it's written down as the 38 Alfa Romeo. Is that right?
Yeah. What happened? The absolute very pinnacle of design pre-war was this touring-bodied Alfa Romeo. You've probably seen pictures of them. They made four. There's two left, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Every angle, every point, and, you know, being an Italian and loving those designs, every curve, if you feel. I'll sit in a stool, put it on the turntable with the hoagie, and just watch it go round and round and round and never get tired. It's so goddamn beautiful.
Well, get an
extra. And it won every race it entered, and I've taken it to the Millimedia 3 times.
Oh,
drove it through the Millimedia a few times, and drove it around. Whenever I get a chance, an honest chance to take it off, I'll take it out, get temporary insurance. But it's wonderful, totally wonderful. Go on. Am I allowed to plug my website?
Sure. We're looking at it now.
Yeah. SimeonMuseum.org. And you look at the pictures of that 38 millimeter Alfa. There's a particularly one taken from high, and it's luscious.
Yeah, it's beautiful. All right, bring an extra stool and an extra hoagie. I'll come out there in June, and we'll sit there in our wife beaters and admire it.
Great. I'd love to have you.
Thanks, Paisan. Fred Simeon.
Okay. My
everyone.
Same to you. All right.
Interesting. Boy, yeah. Quite a collection.
Yeah.
I mean, real heavy duty.
Like, if you just went around and toured the cars in there and just speculated, just wrote down an estimate for each one of those cars, it'd be so tough to do just based on the history, you know, the Le Mans winners and stuff. But you make a pass in there, and it's just like, I can't imagine what the total value is. I'm sure he knows because he's donated the whole thing to charity. There's some sort of tax write-off and of what's going on over there. But what an amazing collection.
Well, it's funny. I'm surprised he gave us the price he paid for the Daytona, but it was right kind of what I was thinking circa 01,
yeah.
3.5. This car's, I've always told you, those cars are kind of undervalued.
And here's the thing. It's like, we have no idea. He said it could have been 10 years before she received the previous offer. She could have never seen an offer more than 75 grand. People lowballing, thinking she's nuts.
Crazy old woman.
And then somebody
and
knocks on the door
living
and says,
in a, living in a piece of shit house in Gardena, you know?
Yeah. And then somebody knocks on the door and says $3.5 million. She's got to be thinking, I'm scamming you, right? Going, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I'll take that check.
Well, I think the moral of the story, kids, is figure out what the car's worth, make an honest offer. You know, if you really want it.
Make an honest offer.
If you want it.
Yeah.
Because if you make an insulting offer, you're going to sort of poison the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it, go get it, especially if you know what you're doing. I mean, you had, you know, 3.5 for that car by 2001. By 2007, it was $7 million. So mm-hmm. you were either going to haggle. What's the difference between 2.8 and 3.5 or whatever it is if the car's $30 million today?
Today, yeah.
Right. So just go get it.
And I'm also impressed by the
$30 million. He basically agreed with my $30
million. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Assertion, right?
Hey, but look at his collection and some of the stories he's been telling. He's acquired those cars long ago.
Yes.
You know, so what he's paid and what it's worth now are wildly different, because he was saying he's like, he could barely afford to keep those things in the building because of just the value they've accumulated in the insurance, you know.
Oh, I can.
But I mean,
I'll tell you, that Daytona that we're speaking of at $30 million, probably not going to crack the top eight of his cars in terms of value.
Right. Right. It's interesting because that car, he probably maybe would have spent $15, $20, $30 million on the entire collection over his lifetime. Probably nowhere even near that. And it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. All right. Let me hit Geico here. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other, right? And then there's your automotive policy. How about getting your bundle on at geico.com? It's easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already got so much to do these days. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save when you go to geico.com. Do it today and see just how easy it is to bundle. All right. In other news, let's see. What do we got?
Just touch on this. I've been driving this Toyota Supra, the 2-liter, the 4-cylinder Supra. And I'll tell you, like, it's, I don't know if you get it in lieu of this 6-cylinder, but it is surprisingly good. It's, I think it's 255 horsepower. The 6-cylinder is 382. They're both BMW engines, both
car's
turbo engines.
Growing on me a little bit.
It is small, and it's actually, it's interesting. I liked it more on the last day that I was driving it than I did the first day. I got a little more comfortable in it. I got a little bit easier getting in and out of it, you know. But it's a little small, and it's a little tight on the inside. I think it'd be tough to get a big guy in there.
Were you at with the 4-cylinder offering? I'm a little old school. I feel like the Supra was known for its straight six. And we're now going to reintroduce the Supra. And it feels a little newfangled to go, oh, we'll give a 4-cylinder option. I get it. It's $6,000 cheaper.
And it's eight grand cheaper.
Really?
Yeah. So this is kind of the funny thing.
Supra
is because
my thing.
When they were doing the Supra, one of the excuses of why Toyota was doing the partnership with BMW was they're saying, how can we do a Supra without the six? How we need the straight six? And then, of course, then eventually they came out with the 4-cylinder. Like, I thought the whole point of the partnership
right.
was to do the six. Now, look, what they did is the 4-cylinder, it's obviously down on power, but It doesn't have the fancy suspension, like the dynamic suspension, but it still has a good damper on it. It's a lighter shocks, lighter suspension.
What's the MSRP on that one?
I think it's 40. I'll find
on
it
the four.
This,
all right.
Yeah. And listen, you can dress them up, and it still gets pretty expensive. You're knocking on the door of $50,000. So
for the four.
Yeah. And it's like just under 3,200 pounds. So the weight advantage is a little bit better balanced. But the four-cylinder is 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds, which is fast. And the eight-cylinder is like 3.8, or, you know, it's about a second faster. Here's the thing. It's like we've seen a lot of car companies take the flagship model, right? Like Ford doing with the GT500, only available in the 7-speed paddle shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, but if you want a manual – you get the GT or you get the EcoBoost. You got to get the smaller engine, right? Mm-hmm. Even the new Bronco. The new Bronco is going to have the bigger engine, automatic only. But if you want the little engine, you can get it with a manual. I feel like they kind of dropped the ball on that with the Supra. The Supra has, I believe it's an 8-speed automatic. You could paddle shift it if you want. But it's the same in the 6 and the 4. So I'm saying, hey, if you want the 4... And the whole idea is the lighter weight, you know, less horsepower, but lighter weight, fun, kind of spirited car. Why not have a manual transmission, right? If it's mm-hmm. mostly BMW, BMW has manual transmissions that can mm-hmm. probably handle that kind of power pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like the optional manual on that car. The automatics pretty much outsell, you know, anything, and that's why we're getting away from them. But, you know, when Porsche just announced their GT3 and they got all their orders in, they got an incredible amount of orders for the manual transmission. More that blew their mind, especially in the U.S.
I don't...
Like 60% were ordering the manual.
Well, let's not jack ourselves off just yet. Because I got to believe that the investor market is wised up. They've seen what's going on Bring a Trailer.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen the difference between a DB9 automatic and a DB9 6-speed, and a, you know, the list goes on and on. What cars are getting a BMW M3, you know, with the 6-speed manual, and they're getting wise to it, and they're saying, you know, if I'm going to order this car, I'm going to order it this way for resale. Now, probably what they don't know is once more than half of them come this way, it's not going to get the kind of resale that cars currently get, where it's, you know, the early 2000s, it was, or later 2000s, everyone was switching to the, it was SMG? What they call
it? Yeah, the SMG and the BMW.
Yeah, they're just going on there. So, you know, the sticks were rare and blah, blah, blah. So it's got to be a little bit rare. But I don't think this is Porsche guys loving the purity of the spirited drive and the clutch. I think it's them,
collectability.
I think it's them looking at collectability. I think when guys order those cars, I think they look at the market, they look at resale, they look at cars that have come before, and they start factoring in things like a sunroof or manual shift or cloth interior. You know, I'm not saying, look, God bless them, they're buying cool Porsches.
Yeah.
I don't want to shit on them. What I'm saying is I think they have, and rightfully so, like you would or I would, a kind of one eye on what do I want and the other eyes on what would make this a good value down the road.
What if the tables turn on something like a GT3, this new model GT3, and more of them are manuals than PDKs?
That's what I'm saying. Then they're going to end up, then the manuals are going to be the pedestrian ones.
Yeah.
And 20 years from now and Bring a Trailer.
Which is kind of interesting is, you know, Toyota Supras.
It can't be that everyone just decided to drive a stick shift.
Or people just decided to buy the car and not drive
it. What percentage of those people can drive a stick?
That's a good question.
I would want to know.
I would argue half of them can't drive the PDK either. But so Toyota Supras were going up quite a bit. We've seen it on Bring a Trailer, the 90s versions of the Supras. really starting to gain some value, jumping to the $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 range and more.
Yeah,
and if you had that six-speed, you're right, that was gold. But, you know, this week, just a day ago, a Supra sold on Bring a Trailer with 94,000 miles on it, I think, for like $72,000 with an automatic.
Wow.
With an automatic. People are losing their mind
right
over that car.
But if that had a stick.
Yeah. Then what does that mean now? Does this.
I think you got to tack 10
yeah
onto that.
Just listen, everybody out there that had a Supra with an automatic or has a Supra with an automatic, you just got your golden ticket. You just got what you were waiting for on Bring a Trailer. Like, this is your biggest day ever.
Well, the comedy, too, is at the time in the early 90s, if you got the automatic, it probably cost you an extra $750.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. You can go to amcarolla.com for all the live shows. I'm doing shows all over the damn place. It's not up on the screen, of course, but you can do that. Oh, Reno, yeah. Going to be there at the Virginia Street Brewhouse March 19th and 20th. I think we're adding shows there. And Jam in the Van Speakeasy March 25th. Two shows out here. Adam Ray is going to be there. Dawson's going to be doing some stand up. Loxie's going to be playing as well. We got some free mangria and cannabis for with every purchase. Just go to adamcarolla.com. Oh, I just added Zanies in Nashville April 14th. Do a live pod there. What do you got, Matt?
Well, speaking of those dates, I'm going to be out at Barrett Jackson. Barrett Jackson is 20 through 27, I think. I'm going to be out there just the
Arizona?
Fridays. In, yeah. And I believe I just found out that it's March.
Mm-hmm.
The COVID restriction, which was limiting Barrett Jackson to about 17,000 people a day, was just lifted. So no holds barred. Let's go
good
out there.
For
I'll
us.
See you there.
Aren't you scared? Oh.
No, I did a show with Brad Fanshawe on Shift and Steer. He was out there shopping for a motorcycle, and he walked into a motorcycle shop with his mask on, and they're like, they kind of had this look like he was robbing the place. He's like, no, I'm from California. And they were still upset.
So, yeah,
that was worse. It was worse. Yeah. But yeah, no mask. I don't know what's going on. They seem fine.
Well, bring the body bag. So, until next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Carolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.